Thank you, Jerry and Joe. And this was, you know, except for the final result, kind of the way you wanted this series to start, where Jose Bautista gets a big at-bat against Sam Dyson in a huge spot in the game. The crowd, 25,323, was as loud as it was when there were 50,000 people in here. And it felt like playoff baseball at that point in the bottom of the eighth. But this time, it didn't work out, and I'm sure the Blue Jays will certainly take it working out on October 14th, 2015, rather than it working out tonight. But it would have been kind of nice to have both. And the issues with this team persist. They just don't score enough runs. And who on earth thought we would be saying that almost a month into this season? They just don't score enough runs, and they didn't tonight. One run, and R.A. Dickey has his best game of the year. Gavin Floyd comes in with the bases loaded and nobody scores, and the Blue Jays still can't win the ball game. They lose 2-1 to the Texas Rangers. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590. Take your calls all the way to 11 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll hear from John Gibbons as well. And who knows, maybe a couple of other people, Ben Ennis down there right now, getting some audio for us in the Blue Jays clubhouse. Our leadoff man, I'm going to say, is Eli in Prince Edward County. You're up first.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you.
That's good. I'm the first caller who actually say that and care to listen to the response.
See, look at that.
Well.
That's swell of you.
Right on. And I just want to refute, you have a lot of callers from Victoria, B.C. to say that that's God's country, but God's country is clearly here in Prince Edward County, in Ontario, wine country, up and coming finance. We're doing well out here, so it's a place to call from.
All right. Glad you did then. Go ahead.
Anyway, Mike, what I wanted to call about, first off, was just to say, already he looked great tonight to all the naysayers. You know, this is the knuckleball, and when he has it, he has it, and it looks great. To all the naysayers, I would just say, watch the documentary. You know, watch the one. It's actually on Netflix. It's easy to find, Knuckleball, and it will tell you about the ups and downs of the pitch. You know, from Phil Nuckrow to Wakefield to Dickey. It's a temperamental pitch, but the guys who master it, you know, they make a career out of it. And R.A. Dickey is the best of the best of making a career out of it. But that's not what I wanted to call about. What I actually wanted to call about was to find out your opinion in the seventh inning. We had a man on. We just had the reviewed play from the sixth to take a run off the board. Got a man on right away, and then Goins up to bat. And the right call there, in my opinion, is a bunt. You bunt them, you move them to second, and then you take your chances with the top of the lineup.
Did you see Ryan Goins bunt in the ninth?
I did.
Yeah, no, that's why Ryan Goins didn't bunt in the seventh.
Just because he failed to do it once doesn't mean it's
the right call. He's not a good bunter. That's the thing, and the thing is, and it's not just to cast aspersions specifically on Ryan Goins, because there are a lot of hitters in the major leagues who are not good bunters. But there seems to be this assumption out there in fan land, and not just Blue Jays fan land, everybody's fan land, that when you ask a guy to bunt, that means he's going to move a runner over. Mm. And really, that's not what it means. I mean, there's the whole thing about giving away outs, and I'm not a fan of giving away outs. I find you know, you only have 27. This team is struggling like crazy to score runs. So, yeah, let's waste an out. In hopes of moving a guy up 90 feet. I don't understand how A leads to B in that scenario. But outside of that.
I hear you, Mike. If you just give me a bit of freedom here, I guess the issue where I find is when he failed to lay the bunt, in the next at bat, there's a pass ball. So now we're not talking, you know.
Granted, yeah, but so what?
Maybe half
that
time
doesn't mean anything. Down. What if he bunts into a double play? What if he pops it up? Regardless of whether you ask him to bunt or whether he doesn't bunt, it doesn't mean there's still going to be a wild pitch in the next at bat. That's, you know, something else too, right? Oh, but Pilar's single would have scored the run if he bunted him over. Well, if he bunts him over, Pilar has just as good a chance of hitting a fly ball to right field as he does getting that same single that
this
he got.
This is true. This is true.
Right?
And I understand the hindsight.
But what it comes down to more than anything else, for me anyway, is that there is this assumption that, all right, I'm going to tell this guy to bunt. He's going to bunt. Runner's going to move 90 feet. Where I would think that's probably, with some guys, likely to happen less than half the time and happen way less often than everybody thinks. Asking a guy to bunt a runner over is simply that. Asking a guy to bunt a runner over. He still has a good chance of not being able to do that.
Especially when you have a guy who's not a good bunter.
I guess even in asking,
the results would, at the very least, still be the same as what they were when you ask him to swing away. In hindsight, and I get that hindsight.
If he still hits into a double play, yeah, but nobody knew he was going to hit into a double play.
Bunt into a double play, you know.
But no, it's if you know what? If I knew that Ryan Cohens was going to hit into a double play, of course I would ask him to bunt. You can't use hindsight when you make those sorts of decisions. And look, I would love to say, and I agree, that I think everybody in the major league should be able to bunt. But at the very least, the poor hitters should absolutely be able to sacrifice bunt at will. They can't. And that's just the situation that we're dealing with right now. Ryan Goins is not a good bunter. And Ryan Goins, unfortunately, is in a trough offensively right now. So I'm not that upset with him not bunting in the seventh inning.
I'm not upset with him. I'm a little upset with the management, I guess, at that point. Like it's a call that should have been made.
That's the right baseball call. But no, it's not. First of all, it's not necessarily it's the right baseball call when you're hitting 160. It's true, but the reason that call wasn't made
is because he can't bunt.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. No, it's a fair call, and I guess it's not my place to say whether he should be up or not if he can't swing at a ball or make a bunt. But it's you still make the calls on the game on the right baseball play.
No, based on what your players are capable of doing and how you put them in the best position to succeed, and asking Ryan Goins to bunt a runner over very clearly, as we saw in the ninth inning. Not the best idea. Thank you for the call. I appreciate your point of view. I do. I just think that too many people think that a sacrifice bunt is an automatic advance of a runner, and it really, 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 really isn't. Whether it should be or not is a whole other argument, but it isn't. We will continue to take your calls. Blue Jays fall 2-1 to the Texas Rangers, but we are going to step away for a second. And when we come back, we'll be back with more Blue Jays talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Again, Dickey tough to run against. Pitch it on the ground to the right side. To his left, to glove it, go and spin, go to second one. Tulo back to first. Call it two. A sensational double play. The inning is over, and a little magic again here for the Blue Jays fans.
That was best double play I've seen all season long. Spectacular by Goins, phenomenal by Tulowitzki. A great job there to end the third inning off the bat of Nomar Mazara. Mazara would homer in the eighth off of Gavin Floyd to give the Rangers the 2-1 lead, and he would throw out Michael Saunders at the plate to end the bottom of the eighth on a shallow to medium depth fly ball by Troy Tulowitzki, but one on which you had to tag, had to force that perfect throw. Mazara made the perfect throw. Rangers beat the Blue Jays 2-1 in the opener of this four-game series. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. And we're taking your calls. You know the numbers. I don't know if there are any lines open right now. We will get to your calls in a minute or two. But first, let's hear from the skipper. Here's what John Gibbons had to say in the wake of tonight's 2-1 loss to Texas.
John, that build up in that eighth inning to the bases loaded. Did you like that tag on the ball of getting medium depth for Saunders there?
You mean when he got thrown out the plate? Yeah, I got no problem with that. I mean, he's the right fielder's on the run, moving to the line. Yeah, no, I got no. I'm trying to make something happen. I got no problem with that at all. Plus, two out hits are hard to come by.
Gibby at the back here, just another game where 10 strikeouts show up on the score sheet. That's 12 times this season that there's been a 10-plus K game. Is there anything that you can do as far as coaching these hitters a bit more?
Hey, that's old news, you know. Keep belaboring the point. Eventually that'll get better.
Gibby, it looked like Dickey was throwing a pretty good knuckleball today. What was your assessment of it?
Sure, Richard, I thought he was really good. You know, and he pitched good enough to win. And he got in a jam. We caught a break there, you know, we threw the guy out at second base before the run across, so we're feeling pretty good. But overall, I thought he was really, really good, you know, and it was a good inning for Storen, too. So hopefully that got Cease in there. Hopefully that builds him up a little bit, too. So, you know, bottom line, you know, in these close games, we're just not executing good enough to win. I mean, it's pretty simple, you know. Base runs have been a little shoddy, you know. We haven't been getting the bunts down like we should, you know. So, you know, that's in tight ball games, you don't win that way.
Gibby, when Dyson came in to face the top of the order, did you have any flashback to last year?
Well, I was hoping for one. Yeah, I mean, it's set up just right, too, you know. It really did, but he's good. You know, I think he's an old Blue Jay farmhand, you know. I don't know how the hell he got away, but he did. But he did his job.
He did. Sam Dyson is an old Blue Jay farmhand drafted by the Blue Jays, remember John Farrell telling us in his office before a game, Sam Dyson had the best stuff in the entire Blue Jays organization. He was a fourth-round pick in 2010, 2 days after Farrell told us that he was sent down, and then the Blue Jays DFA'd him to make room on the 40-man roster for Mark DeRosa. Dyson's a different cat. He's kind of a weird dude, and I think that is one of the reasons that he's on his third organization right now. But he can pitch, and he got the job done tonight. The bases loaded with two on and nobody out, getting Jose Bautista to line out to right field, and then with the bases loaded and one out, getting that shallow fly ball from Troy Tulowitzki that was turned into a double play. This is Blue Jays Talk. And we're taking your calls on the network to the bottom of the hour and then on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, right up until 11 o'clock Eastern Time. Blue Jays fall 2-1 to the Texas Rangers. Once again, they simply do not score enough. Mike is in Ottawa, up to the nation's capital. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for putting me on. I noticed something in the past that I didn't bring to anybody's attention. I think it kind of ties into what we saw tonight in the ball game. Regarding Michael Sanders, Mike.
Saunders, I'm sorry.
I've noticed his play in left field, and I noticed that when he has to go back for a ball, he's great. If he has to go to the right side or the left side for a ball, he's great. But the ball that was hit, balls that are hit in front of him, not directly at him, which can be a trouble spot for outfielders, the balls that are kind of looped into the outfield or this or that, I've noticed two or three times this year, he could have come in to go for those balls, and he backed off. And I'm starting to see tonight where we saw a situation where he should have tagged up at second base, and in the game where the other game where there was two gaffes, I think there was a ball that was hit behind the runner, and there was a tag up at third base where he could have come home, but he didn't. I think we're starting to see that if there's a decision to be made on a close play, he hesitates.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that there have been a couple of brain farts from Saunders, for sure. That game where he didn't tag from third base, and that was, a couple of road trips ago, I think.
Yeah.
It was in Boston or Baltimore. Baltimore, I believe it was. Yeah, that was just a mistake. Today also, he kind of got caught in between on a line drive that looked like it might fall in but didn't. But regardless, he's got to be in a position to tag there anyway. Those, I think, are just a couple of mistakes. As far as the plays in the outfield that you're talking about, I remember a couple of times where people were saying to me, why did he back off that ball? He should have caught that ball. He should have made a diving try for that ball. I think that, first of all, those were both early in the season, both in the first homestand. And I think both those times it was risk versus reward, and he made the right decision both times. You know, you try for the great catch. This is not Kevin Pillar. This is Michael Saunders. You don't make that catch, it's a double or a triple. You back off, and it's a single, and you have to make sure you back off enough so the ball doesn't bounce over your head on the turf. So I don't see a connection between that stuff at all.
I just hope, Mike, this isn't going to be one of these type of guys where he's going to play it safe. And, you know, when you mentioned Kevin Pillar, I thought to myself, exactly what you said. He's the exact opposite. Kevin Pillar, he's diving. He's throwing to every base. He's not taking any plays off. And I just
Saunders doesn't take any plays off. Pillar is, he might be the best outfielder in Major League Baseball. Kevin Kiermaier will argue, but at the very least, Kevin Pillar is the second best outfielder in Major League Baseball. So if you compare Saunders to him, Saunders will fall short every single time.
Well, it's a small sample size, Mike, but let's hope as it gets larger, we don't see this continuing problem.
Yeah, I hope the base running improves. I really do. There have been two mistakes. Neither of them wound up costing the Blue Jays anything. The one in Baltimore where he didn't tag, he wound up scoring when Edwin Encarnacion got a hit. And today when he didn't tag, Edwin walked. So he got to third anyway. So, you know, as long as that happens and Saunders keeps with the OPS somewhere between 800 and 900, and it's over 900 right now, I'm just fine with Michael Saunders. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Julius in New Jersey. Hello, Julius.
Hi, Mike. Bad loss tonight. I don't think it's going to happen forever. Turn around. But I just wanted to make a point, really, about what you said before about the bunting. I was just wondering about the inconsistency. Like you were saying that, you know, why he shouldn't have bunt in the seventh inning. But I'm just wondering, according to your philosophy over there, why is he bunting in the ninth inning?
Oh, well, the ninth inning is different than the seventh inning, for one thing. And you have the tying run at first in the ninth inning. I'm not a huge fan of the sacrifice bunt at any time, as I've said. But when you have a guy who's, what is he, 1-for-2 for his last 40-something, you know, it becomes a lot less unpalatable at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Do you see Darwin Barney coming in at any point to replace Goins until Travis comes back?
I don't know. I mean, Darwin Barney is not a hitter either. As well as he's done this year in his 30 at-bats or so, Darwin Barney's career average is like .245 and his career on base is under .300. So there's no massive offensive improvement. Ryan Goins is not this bad a hitter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they both bring the same thing. They both bring a gold glove caliber defense.
But the
offense, you know, maybe this offense needs Devon Travis again. So,
yeah, look, I don't know when Devon Travis is going to be back. I would say not going to be for at least a month. So there's no real point in trying to figure out what to do until then. But it does sort of surprise me that we haven't seen, at the very least, Goins and Barney being worked into a strict platoon. And I do expect at some point that will happen. But, you know, Ryan Goins isn't going to continue hitting this poorly, and Darwin Barney's not going to continue hitting this well.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any shuffling that might happen in the lineup, you know, because, like, maybe dropping Pillar. I know Pillar is doing very well in the eighth spot, but maybe dropping into the ninth spot so that when Saunders and Donaldson come up to hit, Donaldson will have some more runners to hit in, or like maybe putting Donaldson number three and having Batista take the walks in front of him. I mean, it's a bit unconventional, but like, I'm just wondering what your thought on that is.
I think it's tilting at windmills, as it were. As long as half this lineup isn't hitting, it doesn't matter what order they're hitting in. And that's the deal right now. Half this lineup is simply not hitting. And so, you know, they're going to have to start hitting. And once they start hitting, everything will be just fine. But until they do, moving the batting order around and, you know, making those tiny little tweaks really aren't going to do anything. Isn't going to do anything.
And if they don't start hitting, then...
Then they're sunk.
Then we're done.
Then that's it. If they don't start hitting, they're done. But it's May the 2nd. And so, you know... May the 2nd, they're four games out of first place, despite the fact that they have been terrible.
Saying no time to panic yet.
There's never a time to panic. But, I mean, there certainly is not a time to be declaring the season in great peril, by any means.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And we will get to a lot more of your calls on our network, on our local half hour. We let the network go at the bottom of the hour. The Blue Jays lose 2-1 to the Texas Rangers. Another incredibly frustrating game. R.A. Dickey with his best outing of the season. Gavin Floyd comes in with the bases loaded in the seventh inning and one out, and the Rangers do not score. That playoff atmosphere feeling in the bottom of the eighth inning against Sam Dyson, the stadium was going nuts. This time the Jays could not pull it out. 2-1, Blue Jays fall to the Rangers. Blue Jays talk continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Certainly wasn't the way they drew it up. The Blue Jays score only one run and lose 2-1 to the Texas Rangers. R.A. Dickey gives up a run on six hits over six and a third innings, his best outing of the year so far. Leaves with the bases loaded in the seventh, and Gavin Floyd comes in and strands all those runners. Something we haven't seen much from the Blue Jays bullpen. But then Nomar Mazara homers to lead off the eighth off of Floyd to put the Rangers on top. And in the bottom of the eighth, Sam Dyson comes on to pitch. He walks Michael Saunders. Josh Donaldson singles him to second. And Jose Bautista is at the plate with two on and nobody out against Sam Dyson. The place going nuts. Bautista lines out to right field. And after an Edwin Encarnacion walk, Troy Tulowitzki with a medium-depth fly ball to right. Mazara makes the catch, throws out Saunders at the plate, and the Blue Jays lose 2-1. The series will continue tomorrow night. We're on the air at 7 o'clock Eastern for a 7:07 first pitch. It will be Marco Estrada, who authored much playoff greatness once against the Rangers, up against the lefty Martin Perez. Blue Jays talk will continue on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and sportsnet.ca/590 until 11 o'clock Eastern. So if you're on hold, stay on hold. And if you're not on hold, stay on hold. You've been listening to Home Hardware, Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware. Homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. The legal disclaimer is brought to you by Diamond & Diamond Personal Injury Lawyers. If you've been injured in an accident, you need the right team of lawyers on your side. Lawyers who are not afraid of the big insurance companies. Call the team with a proven track record. Call Diamond & Diamond Personal Injury Lawyers today for a free consultation at 1-800-567-HURT or visit diamondlaw.ca. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Sportsnet Radio Network. For Jerry Howarth, Joe Siddle, Tom Young, Ryan Clark, Josh Goldberg, I'm Mike Wilner. Blue Jays talk continues.
Center field deep, back toward goes Kevin Pillar, still running, he's at the wall, he scales the wall, it's gone. A home run for Nomar Mazara, and Texas goes out in front 2-1 here in the top of the eighth inning on Mazara's third.
Nomar Mazara, who later in that inning threw out Michael Saunders at the plate trying to score the tying run. Big day for the rookie as the Blue Jays fall 2-1 to the Texas Rangers. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. Taking your calls, 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666.
So I think, you know, as a whole, if everybody's doing well, it's not.
And we will get to your calls. We may hear from R.A. Dickey a little bit later on. But first, let's go back to you all. Keith's in Gananoque. Hey, Keith.
Yeah, good evening, Mike. I don't know if you remember, a couple of weeks ago I tried to call you, and my cell phone died right in the middle of my call. I know you've been fielding a lot of calls from some Dickey bashers over the last few weeks, and you've made your position very clear that you want to hear facts and nothing but facts when it comes to people dissing Dickey. And sure. I'm calling to deliver a fact that I thought he pitched an unbelievable game tonight. So I'm calling to eat a little crow from you. I've spent a lot of money on Dickey jerseys, and I've been one of the guys that have been bashing him since the beginning of the season. And tonight, you know, he pitched an unbelievable game. I feel like I want to have Drew Hutchinson pitching every night because for some reason he gets unbelievable run support, and it, run support seems to elude Dickey every time he goes to the mound.
Well, run support, unfortunately, is eluding everybody this year. This team is just not scoring enough runs. But, yeah, that's, you know, if run support could be repeatable, then, yeah, absolutely, Drew Hutchison should be pitching every day. Unfortunately, it's not. Appreciate the call, Keith, and I appreciate the willingness to eat crow. I do understand that, you know, I'm the guy you call right after the game, and when the Blue Jays lose, everything is terrible and everybody's awful, and I'm a huge homer because I don't agree that everybody sucks and everybody should be fired. I get that. It is nice to hear people who have reconsidered. I mean, I still got a few Dickey is garbage tweets tonight. So what are you going to do? Chris in Stony Creek. Hey, Chris.
Mikey, how are you, buddy?
All right, go ahead.
Frustrating game tonight, my friend.
You betcha.
I agree with you completely about the Goins thing. You know, like, obviously he's a horrible bunter, as we could see for the ninth inning. But if you are not good with the bat and you're batting under 220, like, you should go to the cage and you should practice bunting. You know, like it's completely unacceptable the amount of major league players out there who don't know how to bunt, you know, and comes up with a situation like this where you're in the seventh inning, bottom of the seventh inning, there's only six outs left to go in the game and the game's tied 1-1 and you have the opportunity to move a guy from first to second. And you can't even, as a manager, put the call on for the bunt because you're worried about the guy at the plate not being able to even put down a proper bunt. Like even the bunt you put down in the ninth inning was an atrocious bunt. Like that bunt's either got to get by the pitcher or you have to put it over to the third base side so you can get that guy over to second base. So it's absolutely atrocious that he can't put a bunt down like that, man.
An atrocious bunt is one that's like lined back at somebody or bunted hard into a double play. That was just not a good bunt.
Mikey, man. He bunted it almost straight back to the pitcher.
Yeah, and
it was pretty close to being a double play, man.
But I've seen many, many, many worse bunts.
Yeah.
But regardless of whether atrocious is the right word or not, the truth of the matter is it was a bad bunt. And again, it's, you know, a lot of people will say, well, this is unacceptable or this is unacceptable or this is unacceptable. But unfortunately, it's a reality. So you have to accept it. And I don't think a guy going to the cage for half an hour and working on his bunting is going to change that.
No, but you and listen, I agree with you. You know what I mean? One session in the batting cage is not going to get a guy to be a proficient to be proficient at the plate, but like stuff like that is practiced right from spring training, like all the way across. It's not like Goins was a great bunter last year, and now all of a sudden he comes up this year and he's just forgotten how to bunt. You know what I mean? It's just from you know, it just goes back to some of the sort of like fundamentals of the game. You know what I mean? People not being able to bunt, not Saunders not tagging up at second. Even though I'll be honest with you, it was, you know, you give me your opinion, but I think it was, you know, it's not like it was a pop fly where, you know, like Jose did hit that one pretty good on the screws, and if that wasn't hit kind of right at the guy in right field or in right field, he might have had a shot. So that one's kind of iffy, you know, but it's just overall the fundamentals of the game, you know what I mean? I just find that they're just not really there. They're just lacking, and in certain games like this where fundamentals of the game are the difference between scoring one run or not scoring a run, you know, you see the problem with it, right? But I think some of the positives that came from this game was really good outing by Storen and a really good outing by Cecil and a good outing by RA. And in general, I think that in terms of Gibby, like I don't know what Gibby can do to try to manufacture some more runs. You know, I just think that moving guys along, getting better at bats. But at the end of the day, you know what I mean, you're kind of nitpicking at stuff, but at the end of the day, you kind of are where you are in this lineup. You know, when you come up with Donaldson and Jose and Edwin and Tulo, and some are getting the job done and some are not, you kind of got to go with what you have, right?
Yeah, and that's why I don't get, and I appreciate the call, Chris. I want to try to get to a few people. That's why I don't get the idea of shuffling the batting order, or, you know, even just being upset at John Gibbons for this team not scoring runs. There's legitimately nothing he can do to get this team to score more runs. The hitters have to produce. The hitters have to start doing their jobs. You got first and second, nobody out. In the eighth inning, Bautista, Encarnacion, Tulowitzki coming up, and the Jays don't score. How on earth is that John Gibbons' fault? How is that Gibbons not being able to manufacture runs? This team's not scoring. But that doesn't mean the hitters are terrible and they're never going to score runs. These are good hitters. We're 27 games into the season. They will hit. And if they don't hit, somebody else will be here trying to hit. Randy is in Moncton. Randy.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Randy.
Hope it doesn't come to somebody else being there, but it is surprising how this team has gone a month and not hit.
It is.
I thought
stunning.
2 weeks, but a month? Whoa. I won't get into the Ryan Goins thing. The other caller already covered it. Look, his only job is to get the runner to second base. He should be able to do it, and he didn't. So that's all there is to it. You had a caller that suggested that the Drew Storen for Ben Revere trade wasn't so good. Well, Storen came out and pitched well tonight, and I think that trade will work out. I think that trade's going to work out fine for the Blue Jays.
Well,
I guess the other disappointing thing is
that he took over for Revere has a 930 OPS, and Revere has had two plate appearances this year, so I think it's worked out great.
Yeah, I guess the only really disappointing thing is, and it's early, but as good a starting pitching as they've been getting, they're under 500. And you hope the starting pitching keeps going like this, because if that tapers off and they don't hit, then you have a real problem. And one more thing before I go. Back in the 1940s, the Washington Senators had four knuckleballers. You imagine what your Blue Jays talk would be with four knuckleballers in eight?
That would be something. But I think fans would like some of them and not like some of them. It depends. It depends how many of them won a Cy Young Award the year before they got traded here.
It's true.
Thanks, Randy.
You're welcome.
All right, Blue Jays lose it 2-1 to the Texas Rangers. Let's hear from the knuckleballer. R.A. Dickey had his best start of the season. Gives up a run on six hits over six and a third, three walks, three strikeouts. Leaves in a 1-1 tie in a game the Blue Jays lose by a final score of 2-1. Here is what Dickey had to say when the microphones got shoved in his face after the game.
An encouraging start to the month of May after what you kind of told us last week. You just wanted to turn the page on people.
Yeah, I felt pretty confident. I've been working real hard in between outings, and you know, the season is really six different seasons, right? And right now we're sputtering a little bit, but you know, we've got the pedigree in here, and it's just a matter of time before we start clicking.
All right, what are some of the adjustments you made between starts to help you?
Just trying to get more in attack mode, I think, trying to work ahead and counts a little bit more. I firmed up my knuckleball a little bit more consistently than I had thought. I carried the velocities through the innings well. It usually takes me a little bit to get going, and my hope is that this is the start of, you know, 27 more quality starts. I mean, that's what I'm working towards, and I know our pitching staff in general, I mean, we've been dependable, and I want to keep that trend going.
How much of a difference does that extra bit of velocity make for you?
I think psychologically for me it makes a good bit of difference. I mean, as far as being able to attack the strike zone with a knuckleball that's 77 or above, you feel like your margin of error is better. And I still mechanically pulled off of a few. I mean, even the home run to Nicholas there was kind of one that I ran away from a little bit and tried to guide in there for a strike. It just didn't catch, and you know, he hit it out. And so once I start eliminating those, I'll go deeper and deeper into games, I think. And it's going to take some work, and I'm up for it.
the way the offense is going, RA can happen to pitchers in any. It's a bit of a psychological game that enters in now as the struggles compound.
That's an interesting insight. I mean, you're dealing with a lot of professionals in here. I mean, pros here. And it's very unlikely that this trend is going to continue. I mean, rarely do you have four or five guys in the lineup not going at the same time. I mean, that's rare. But we can all sit up here and say it's going to turn until it does. You know, there's no guarantee. So everybody is going to have to put in the work that they know they need to do in order to turn the page. But, you know, like I said, we can fall back on, you know, the professionalism in this room. I think a lot of guys are taking it personally, and we all should. So we'll see where it goes from here. But I'm optimistic.
There's R.A. Dickey. And he's 100% right. And believe it, believe me, I feel it up here too. We can say things are going to turn and be confident that things are going to turn. But until things turn, they haven't turned. And right now they haven't. This team scored one run tonight after getting 15 hits over a three-game series in Tampa against the Rays. And they won that series, but sure didn't feel like it because they just didn't score. And they just haven't scored, and they continue to not score. The pedigree is there, and I firmly believe that the hits are going to come, and the Blue Jays are going to win some 9-6 games this year because the starting pitching isn't going to stay this good all year long. If it does and they start to hit, look out. They'll still win 100 games. But there are ups and downs with everything. And there will be Blue Jays talks in June where we're talking about why can't the starting pitchers, why are they wasting these 7- and 8-run performances? Hopefully at some point, sooner than later, the bats start to come around, the bullpen starts to come around, and the starting pitchers stay, don't fall off a cliff, and then this team will be fine. But until they start to hit, they haven't started to hit. Brad is in Toronto. You're up next on Blue Jays Talk. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Rick. What's remarkable about this team is that they're only three games under 500, yet, you know, their hitting has been, I'll use the word atrocious, although I'll use it sparingly, and their bullpen has been well below average. So it's somewhat, I think they're, I don't know the precise record, is it 9-12? I think it's overstated because they're probably playing at a 333 clip overall. But the point I want to make, and not to belabor the point, is on the issue of bunting, and you're probably rolling your eyes, but the question I have is, why is it that the players do not spend more time trying to bunt? I know that you've responded in the past that they just don't do it. Most of them don't do it. I've gone to batting practice, and they stand there, and they take, you know, dozens and dozens of pitches at 50 miles an hour right down the middle, and they smack the heck out of the balls, and they know how to do that, and they go in the batting cages, and they do the same. But why don't they spend 10, 20, 30% of the time on those fundamentals like bunting?
You know, I was thinking about that as well, and what they'll do is they'll – at the beginning of every round of batting practice, every hitter will bunt once down the third baseline and once down the first baseline, and they don't take it seriously, and they don't care, and they just do it because they do it. But Ryan Goins, for example, don't you want him working on his hitting a lot more than you want him working on his bunting?
It breeds, and I'm saying that there is a role, and I agree with you that bunting has a limited role and it has a place, but maybe 10%, 20%, instead of taking 70, 80 balls, fastballs, and smacking them, you know, for doubles off the wall in batting practice, maybe spend, you know, take, you know, 6, 7, 8 shots at bunting.
Yeah, you know what? I wouldn't be firmly opposed to like a round of bunting where you're actually trying to get a bunt down the way you would do it in a game, and you know, put it in a spot and get the ball down and don't hit it too hard and try to deaden it well. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's not done anywhere, not just here, anywhere.
And yeah, agreed. Okay. And the second point is with respect to the shift, and I understand why it's done, and you've talked about the stats, and more often than not, it works.
Yep.
But however, when you're hitting like 180 or 160 in certain players, it just seems as though certain players almost seem to not care about the fact that the shift, that they're going to either hit a double into the gap or they're going to hit a home run, that it seems like the opposing team is essentially offering you first base and you're batting, you know, 160, 170. Am I correct to say that like a lot of players say, if it's bravado or whatever it is, doesn't matter, I'm going to hit past that shift?
I don't know if it's bravado from everybody. I think for some people it absolutely is. You know, you put that shift on me, I'll hit it over the shift,
right,
or through it. But there are guys who have said that trying to shoot the ball the other way gets them out of their mechanics and can really mess them up. So, you know, for those people, I don't know that you want to. But I mean, I don't. Again, for me, I don't see how dropping a bunt down to an open side of an infield can mess with your mechanics at all.
I agree.
So maybe that's, you know, bravado,
like,
a little,
you know,
bit.
If you're batting 200, you have, you know, like a 20% chance of getting on, and you know, they're basically offering you the base. And,
yeah. Anyways, no, I agree with you.
Frustrated.
If I had that ability and I was a big leaguer who was getting shifted on, I would bunt against the shift every single time.
Yeah.
That happened. Until they stop doing it.
Well,
thanks,
anyways,
Brad.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Appreciate the call. Matt is in Burlington. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, go ahead.
All right, so I was just wondering, in the eighth inning with Saunders on third, or when he was on second or first, why did they never bring in Barney to pinch run then to tag up and score?
Because Michael Saunders doesn't require a pinch runner. I mean, that was a medium-depth fly ball, a laser of a throw, and a great one. And it was a bang-banger, he might have been safe. Saunders isn't a guy you pinch run for when you have Edwin Encarnacion and Justin Smoke your lineup.
You not think that Barney's a little bit faster, though?
Yeah, he's a little bit faster. He's a little bit faster than Bautista. He's a little bit faster than Donaldson. He's a little bit faster than Tulowitzki. He's a little bit faster than a lot of guys.
If the play was so close that the Jays went and challenged it, you not think it was close enough that Barney would have made it?
Probably, but are you anticipating a medium depth fly ball and a perfect throw? You can't pinch run for everybody and every opportunity to score a run. Michael Saunders is not a slow guy.
No, not at all. But you have to play for the tie before you can play for the win.
That's not a smart use of your assets.
They ended up losing as opposed to tying it, though.
Yeah. But that's quite a leap of logic that you're making, right? You have Darwin Barney pinch run for Michael Saunders. Okay, and let's assume that the same thing still winds up happening, which all of a sudden becomes unlikely to happen. And instead of a fly ball on which Saunders scores easily, or a single, or a ground ball that scores a runner, or something like that, that exact same play happens if you pinch run Darwin Barney. Then you go into the ninth inning in a tie game. You have Darwin Barney playing left field, or Ryan Goins playing left field. You still need to score another run, which this team has had a hard time doing, and you have weakened your defense quite measurably, all for that tiny, tiny chance of having a guy who's a little bit faster than another guy.
Yeah, I just think that tying into the ninth is better than losing into the ninth.
I agree. A tie game into the ninth is better than losing into the ninth. Pinch running Darwin Barney for Michael Saunders is still not a good idea.
I disagree, but
okay.
Have a great time.
You are entitled to. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Andrew is in London. Hello, Andrew.
Oh, hi, Mike. I've been listening to you for years about the bunting thing.
Yep.
Have you ever found a manager, a coach, or a player who agrees with you on that?
Well, there are guys who are getting closer to it. Sacrifice bunts have gone way, way down over the past 10 years.
Yeah, because guys don't bunt.
Pardon?
I mean, they don't bunt. I mean, you know, there's no money in bunting.
What do you mean? I don't understand.
Well, you just said it before when the guy called up and said, I watch him at batting practice and he don't care about bunting.
Right.
Okay. And why is that? Because they don't
I don't like bunting. I think bunting
is... No, them, not you. Why don't they care?
Because it can win games. Because the... What's the word I'm looking for? The era that we're in now, the way current professional athletics is played, it is no longer about the whole lockstep fundamental everything. It's about getting on SportsCenter and all that stuff. Okay. But
that's what I'm saying to you. There's no glory in bunting. That's why they don't bunt.
Right. I don't understand.
There are 30 managers in baseball. There's got to be, 120 coaches. Could you find one of them who agrees with you? That's all I'm asking.
Agrees with me about what?
And give up an out. This is the worst thing you can do, you know? I mean.
Oh, well, like I said, they're starting to come around. It's very, very hard to break down decades of convention.
So you're right and they're wrong, right? Is that what you're saying?
No, math is right and they're wrong.
Oh, math is right. Oh.
Yeah. Math is always right. Math is never wrong.
Well, how do you explain, though? We got a great hitting team on the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Well, not this year, but last year and everything else. And I could name 10 National League pitchers who can bunt, and none of these guys can.
Oh, I can name 50 National League pitchers who can bunt.
Well, yeah, and so what does that tell you?
That tells me that these guys can't bunt.
But bunting helps.
But National League pitchers can't hit.
No, we don't. What I'm saying is bunting is not that hard. If pitchers can bunt, a good hitter can bunt, right?
Everyone should be able to bunt.
Yes, but they don't.
Right.
Why?
Didn't you tell me why a minute ago?
No, you're the expert. Tell me why they don't.
Well, I had a whole caller talking about that. You're like the fifth guy who's called talking about bunting.
Yeah, and why don't they bunt?
Because they're not, they would rather hit.
There's no
because
money
they're not
in
being,
bunting.
They're not being.
Anyway, okay.
So you just wanted to answer my question with your own answer that you said a couple of minutes ago. Excellent work. Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate the call. We got to go. There's no money in bunting. They're not being taught to bunt. They're not being taught to bunt in high school, before high school. And they're all super hitters down there, so it doesn't matter. They don't have to. And they come to the major leagues not being able to execute that fundamental. Blue Jays and Rangers tomorrow. We're on the air at 7 o'clock. Marco Estrada, Martin Perez, thanks so much for listening.